Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 110 of Geek Town Radio. This week I have the triumphant return of Mike.
Yay!
It has been a while.
A little bit of a while.
Now you're not stuck in hotel rooms or out of the country or whatever.
It sounds good, doesn't it?
Help, I'm trapped in a hotel. So what have you been up to other than your travels?
So the most recent thing I did was probably only yesterday. I finished the latest collected volume of the Saga series.
Oh yes, cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's taken a long time. It's very tempting to go down to reading the individual comics just to keep up with it. Because it takes a long time, but I like to do a whole load of them in one go. But it's great, it's fantastic. And it's so sad in places as well. The end of the last one was really sad.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant. I'd love them to do a TV adaptation of that. It would be Game of Thrones expensive, that if they did it.
And it'd be a really difficult sell to anybody that wasn't already a fan.
Yeah, it would be. But it's an amazing, amazing comic book, that. Yeah. Really, really good.
And the themes in it are so grown up.
Yeah.
It sounded, if you described it, it would sound like a children's thing. It really would.
Because it's crazy. So not a children's thing.
Yeah, it's so not a children's thing. My kids haven't seen it and they're not going to read it either.
Yes. No. Not appropriate.
The other thing I did was I finished the second series. I'm way behind on this one. I finished the second series of Marco Polo, second and final series of Marco Polo, because it was canned. And I think that it's a shame that it was canned. The first series was very slow. It was gorgeous looking and I enjoyed it, but it was very slow. But the second series really hit a good pace and got quite good.
Yeah.
Probably because it was under threat, I would say. Probably they pulled out all the stops, but it was good and it's finished.
I think it was one of those shows. I spoke to the costume designer for that a while back.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those shows that it took a while to find its feet, and because she said the same thing, you know, the first few episodes are a little bit slow, but it picks up towards the end of the first season, and then the second season,
it definitely rewarded you if you stuck with it.
Yeah. Well, she said exactly the same thing, and I think the problem is that there's so much good stuff out there right now. It's difficult, you know. I'm glad Netflix stuck with it for two seasons, but it's an expensive show to make, I'm sure.
I can only imagine that it wasn't paying for itself.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the problem with it. But it's sad that, because, you know, there's only so much you can do when you can't throw money at it if it's not making the numbers. And unfortunately, there's no way to do that show cheaply, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But it's a shame, especially as it just ended. ended with a cliffhanger.
And then
that was it. I find that very frustrating.
I mean, it's a shame they didn't give him the opportunity to do like a feature length thing.
Just to close it out.
But what are you going to do?
Yeah. And the other thing I've been spending a lot of time on is Mass Effect Andromeda. Yay. Hooray, which I'm sure you've done to death.
We have, particularly. I finished it last week, I think.
Yeah.
After 100 hours.
So, it's a long old game. And I've been playing it because I'm playing it on Xbox.
Right.
So I am now a fully committed Xbox gamer.
Yes.
The only thing that I play on the PC now is Old Republic. Everything else, all my plans, everything is Xbox. So that's. Yeah. A wild thing that I would never have dreamt of this time last year. it's a great game, but everybody's talked about the bugs and and the terrible animations and the varying quality.
They're supposed to fix some of the animations in the latest patch.
So I don't know if that patch has hit Xbox yet.
Oh, okay.
But
you can tell if it's hit because the eyes on the human characters have changed.
Right. Okay.
They look less like kind of, you know,
drugs.
Less like they're less on drugs and like they're basically ping pong balls with eyes painted on, which is sort of what they were before. Yeah. They've actually subtly kind of altered them.
Yeah, it's
so
weird.
They look a lot better.
It's weird. But it's always been a BioWare thing, hasn't it? Terrible animations and moment. It's like genius surrounded by terrible mistakes.
I think as I've said before on the show, it's one of those games that could have done with just a couple more polishing passes just to iron it out a little bit. But you know, I don't think it's any worse than any other Mass Effect game when it was first released.
No, and I think I'm thoroughly enjoying it. You know, it's not but there are bugs. I mean, I think in the vault at Kadara, I've spent about an hour and I couldn't find a console to open up a pathway. And then I looked at it on, I cheated in the end, I had enough. I looked at it, apparently it's a bug.
Right.
You do certain things, one of these consoles doesn't arrive. But I'd spent an hour running around like an idiot going, stupid. So I had to open another save game and then play through a whole, you know, bunch of it again. Just things like that. And I ran up, you know, the sort of meeting area on the ship.
Yeah.
I ran up that, but I obviously was moving too quickly for the game to keep up. I ran up it and fell through the floor, which hadn't appeared, into space. And then there was like a few minutes of my character falling before it died and then reappeared on the ship. And it's like, that's ridiculous. Is that an Xbox? Is that an Xbox thing? Because you'd think, and this is the thing that surprised me, you accept stuff like that on a PC because there's lots of different, you know.
Yeah.
There's lots of variables with PCs and you expect there to be bugs and things like that with, you know, they've tested it and tested it, but they don't know what graphics card you're using and there's lots of things that could be different.
Yeah.
But an Xbox is an Xbox. And you would expect with consoles for things to be tested and things to be working fairly smooth and for that not to happen.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you there. And I mean, I didn't have any major like game stopping bugs. There were two missions. One was there was a terminal in the first place that you
EOS.
Yeah. There was a terminal in the place that you set up on EOS, which was showing a quest, and when you clicked on the console, it wasn't there. That was fixed with the bug update. There was also one where I was outside on was it Vold, the ice planet?
Yeah.
And
did you snipe the guys? Was that the one where you snipe that you're chasing after the a transponder from the Asari ship?
No, it wasn't that one.
There was another one there where if you snipe the guys from a distance, which is essentially what I do all the time,
I just snipe them.
If you don't get close enough, it doesn't trigger an event which causes the next thing to happen. So if you snipe them all and walk in, nothing happens.
Oh, dear.
Which was another thing I had to Google because I couldn't. It was frustrating me. It was telling me it was right there in front of me, but there was nothing to interact with.
Right, yeah.
And that was a...
There's a thing where he's complaining about radio transmissions and it's a meteor that's causing the problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got to go and sort the meteor out. Yeah. But temperature was dropping.
Yeah.
So I was almost in the red on that. So I ended up running back to, or taking the car back to push my gauge back up.
Yeah.
And then had to come back out again. And because I'd been away and come back, I could no longer interact with the meteor. So those are the only two places where I've found that I couldn't complete missions for things, but they were sort of fairly minor side missions, you know. So
that's a Mass Effect thing, isn't it? Having patches to fix things that are broken.
Yeah, exactly.
We expect it, but it's so good. I mean, there are lots of haters that must expect perfection, and I don't know many games that are perfect when they're
exactly.
It's been The Witcher is something that is held up as an example of how things should be done a lot, and I guess the animations there were very good.
Yeah, but I mean, The Witcher, you've got to remember The Witcher learned from their mistakes because the first iteration of the first Witcher game
was terrible.
It was absolutely slated, to the point that they ended up releasing a deluxe edition which completely re-recorded every single bit of dialogue.
Yeah, and that's something BioWare have always been quite good at historically, yeah, yeah, so I suppose they've kind of not really got better and everybody else has
You know, that was the thing. The Witcher had such an amazing screw-up with the first game because it was buggy, and but they fixed it for free. Mm-hmm. I mean, they almost completely redid large sections of the game to make it work.
I had that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that made a huge, huge difference. And I think because they've learnt from that, their quality is they're always so careful about making sure that things work well. And I mean, you look at the last iteration, the Wild Hunt game, phenomenal bit of work that. Mm. So, and I mean, I played through Mass Effect. It was 100 hours in total. I thought the storyline was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I know some people are finding the start a bit slow, but I didn't have any issue with that at all.
No, not at all.
It's a BioWare game. It's exactly what BioWare games are like. So. Yeah.
No, I didn't even think it was that slow, to be honest.
No, neither did I.
If you replay it a few times, the beginning can get a bit annoying.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
And that's the same with most games, you know?
Exactly.
I do remember... this is probably a bit of ancient history. Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah.
A game that was so replayable. You could play it so many different ways with so many different characters. But the beginning bit in Arrhenicus's dungeon was so boring after you'd done it once. And it was amazing the first time you did it, but once you'd done it three or four times, it was just really painful.
Right.
Because that was the bit where it was the same regardless of what you did.
Yeah.
But there was a mod release that just skipped that dungeon completely. And whoever created that mod, brilliant, because it just cut out like that whole hour of just slogging through the dungeon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just this character appeared and said, I'll just take you straight to the end if you like and give you a load of stuff. This is the stuff that you'd have picked up, and it was good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I would highly recommend anybody that's certainly into RPGs, you know, action adventure games, because I think I really like the engine that they've used, which is the for Mass Effect, the Dragon Age engine, because it works so well for the combat and stuff. I think the combat's fantastic.
It's very slick. It's very slick. It's seamless. Mm. And I mean, it's a good game.
It's a really good game.
Sticking points. I think a lot of the problems.
Yeah, a lot of the problems people had with it, I think, are relating to the fact that it wasn't Mass Effect as much. Because the way they made a lot of changes in terms of how the combat worked and that sort of stuff, and you couldn't micromanage things.
But Mass Effect was more on rails, though.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There were bits of it. Certainly the combat was. And I much prefer the way Dragon Age was. Certainly the last Dragon Age game, I really, really liked Inquisition. So
I liked Inquisition, but
great
for me. I think Andromeda's better than Inquisition.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
It feels more focused.
Yeah, maybe. I enjoy both equally. I think they're different, but you know, I thought they were both really good.
It's Mass Effect enough. Mm. Certainly.
It is. It is, absolutely.
And it's a piece of genius in terms of creating a story that actually works after Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
Let's just not do it then.
Let's just take it 600 years in the future and take them to a different galaxy. Yeah. But there are, you know, it's an attached sort of thing.
Yeah.
That works really well.
That's a really clever bit of storytelling. And that's something that they've always been really good at.
Absolutely, yeah.
What else have we done? Oh, yeah, I've watched Rogue One a few more times since it came on DVD.
I haven't yet. I've only seen it in the cinema once, so I need to watch it a few more times.
Interesting, though. It's not quite as rewatchable as I thought it would be.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really, really good film, and it set the bar really high for The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
But it's quite shallow. But then it's a filler, right? It's an in-between bit.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no plot holes. There's nothing to worry about. It's just what it is.
Yeah, it has a sort of limited space that it can fit into, I guess.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's good.
Yeah,
enjoyed
yeah.
And I've been reading books.
Wow.
Have you heard of Tad Williams?
The name rings a bell.
So Tad Williams has written lots of different books, but he's primarily fantasy.
Right.
And he wrote a series a couple of decades ago, I think, set in a world called Ostenard, and it's like a trilogy with four books in it.
Right, yeah.
So not a trilogy, but a trilogy.
Yeah.
and it's the Memory, Sorrow and Thorn trilogy. And it's really like old school high fantasy, really right. Like proper old school.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It builds up quite slowly. And then it's kind of by the end of the last book, the world's at risk, that kind of thing. And he's got a new series that follows that series coming out like decades later.
Right.
That everyone's really excited about. But in between, he's done a kind of a book, a standalone book, kind of an Empire Strikes Back type thing, in that it doesn't really work if you didn't read the first lot.
Right.
And it kind of sets up the second lot. And it was really good, but it's got, you know, elves in it, but they're not like elves. They're something else, but they're kind of elves, really. All
right.
The tropes are in there. Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's quite good. I think you should try it out. It's quite grown up. The themes are quite sort of grown up themes. Certainly more so. It feels more so than the original series was kind of very traditional.
Okay.
But essentially this one book was about the futility of war. So it was a follow-up to the end of this big war, and the bad guys have run away because it's all failed.
Right.
And then this army, the sort of victorious army, is chased after them to their home with the intent of wiping them out. So you've gone from the good guys and the bad guys to nobody's,
sort of
you're not really sure.
Gray area. Yeah, 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 yeah. Interesting.
It's really good. But he's done lots of stuff. I mean, one of the things, there's a series that he did around an angel called Bobby Dollar. Fantastic. These are the first ones that I read. And essentially, he's on Earth. He's kind of like a private detective.
Right.
It's kind of, I don't know what it's like. It's kind of, he's dealing with like supernatural issues. So
yes.
He's there. He works for heaven, right?
Yeah.
But it's the seedy side of it all.
Right.
And he's dealing with like demons. So if a demon comes to Earth and does bad things, they're allowed to intervene.
Right.
But it's bad. And he drinks too much and he goes to like dodgy places and he doubts it all as well. He starts to doubt what's going on and what he's being told. And
sounds like a bit of a cross between the TV show Supernatural and Constantine.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Interesting.
And also there are other sort of deities from other religions in it
right,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's just really, really entertaining.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. Bobby Dollar, right? Really, really. And there's also, even though the guy's American and it's set in America, there are some ghosts in it. Like Brummy Ghosts, right? Which is the most out of place thing called the Solly Hall Sisters.
Right.
Right? Not spelt the same way, Solly Hall, but the
yeah,
Solly
yeah.
Hall Sisters, but they've got, they're Brummies basically, and apparently they were murderers or something like that. But it's really strange reading about these ghosts, and they give him information sometimes.
Right.
But they're proper Brummies, which is just, it's the most hilarious thing to sort of suddenly come across in this book that's set in like California or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd recommend that. But I've just, that book I've just finished, and he's the new series, I think it's June, something like that, comes out.
Yeah.
So I'm patiently waiting. But yeah. I read those, you know, it's a big chunk of books to read. But the Bobby Dollar ones are good fun, and they're kind of work as standalone books, but they're really good fun.
Interesting.
Really
good I might fun. Go and look those up.
Top Gear as well.
Yes, Top Gear. Yes, you're the one person I wanted to ask about. What are you thinking about the new Top Gear?
I like it.
Good.
It started off a bit slow.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just got better and better and better. And the relationship between the characters, the guys,
yeah,
is a really important, you know, ingredient. They got better and better and more natural, and they're sort of falling into their natural sort of roles.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you've got the nerdy racer who's like, you know, picking flies and everything. You got the American,
yeah,
who's he's playing his part, really, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's playing up to the expectation of him. And then you've got the sort of like the guy who's really like a puppy, enthusiastic with stuff, you know, but they all treat him kind of a bit like the hamster, right?
He's
I know he's not like the hamster, but that's kind of the role that he's in.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
And yes, it's very scripted, just like all the others.
Yeah.
But my criticism of Top Gear when it ended, when the old era ended, was that it was too scripted. And my criticism of Grand Tour was that it's just so polished and so scripted, nothing felt natural. So you knew everything was finely tuned and finely balanced, and so it had lost any element of surprise, or it just didn't feel natural. But this kind of felt, some of these interactions, although they're probably still scripted, they just felt good.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. And
yeah.
Possibly the last few in the series were some of the best ones that I've seen for
like
years, I would say.
Yeah. I think they've been doing a phenomenal job with it. I think it's the as you say, exactly what you said, really. The fact that it didn't, you know, they weren't quite gelling, but there was something there when it first started. And it's just got better and better as it's gone through. I mean, its numbers aren't quite as high as it was when it first returned last time.
Right.
But it's holding steady.
Yeah, where it didn't hold steady at all.
Yeah, whereas it fell off a cliff last time. They've not had that.
Yeah.
And we always knew it was going to get lower, you know, because of the fact that Hammond, Clarkson and May were such a big draw. So it was always going to be lower. But I think, you know, in some respects, having that last season fail has helped them quite a lot.
Yeah, because they couldn't lose this time, really. There's only one way to go.
You know, I don't think there's going to be any issue with bringing it back again, because it's had a much more positive reaction this time than it did last time.
I enjoyed it, and I'd kind of lost, the old Top Gear had kind of lost me a bit. So I still watched it, but it was just like, I was just disappointed constantly.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed to be a bit more car focused as well this time around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they are still doing kind of some of the stunts, but the stunts have got a little less.
It's like Top Gear was maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. You know. So there's a range of cars that they're deliberately, you know, it's not just supercars.
Yeah.
And there was a Ducati in it as well.
Yeah.
Really good. Yeah, Mala Blanc, and clearly, unless that was a body double, padded out body double.
I suspect not. No, I
mean, he can throw that thing around. I was really impressed.
No, I mean, he seems to really like his bike, so, you know.
Not bad for a big guy.
No.
There was a bit where I did laugh. It was the episode before last, I think, where he was talking about what tends to happen when large car manufacturers make supercars.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the guy in the cup holder department, and then the fat guy department guy, to make sure fat guys can fit it. And he was only slightly smaller than the fat guy that they were. And you thought, hang on, has only me noticed that?
Yeah. Yes, it's all those Joey donuts, I think.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. So, yeah, for me, there's been a few interesting things this week. Obviously, after Mass Effect, I was looking for something to go back and play. So I went back onto the Old Republic for a bit.
Oh, yes.
So I'm working through the Imperial Agent, one of the Imperial Agent Sniper.
Good. Yeah, Imperial Agent's a good story.
Yeah. So, and... I remember last time we talked, you said you could basically go through without doing anything other than the storyline missions. So I'm doing that, and I've gone in like 2 days. I went from basically 1 to 26, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so it's fairly
easy. You could
argue
they've made it too easy, but by this point, most people playing it have already struggled through the whole story.
Yeah.
So most people are replaying.
And I don't think they have made it too easy. I think, you know, if you want to go and do all those other quests, they are there.
There's a benefit to doing it, but if you don't want to, if you're replaying, like I said, most people probably are now.
Yeah, exactly.
You can just do the bits you haven't done before.
I mean, I'd sort of gone through, because I haven't played the new storylines yet. So I could take my high level character and go and do those storylines. But part of me is like, I can't quite remember exactly what I'm doing or how to play and stuff. So I thought, well, I'll go and start with a level one character in it, and decided the Imperial Agent, because I remember that everybody saying that was quite a good storyline. So I'm playing through that right now.
So on reflection, having played through all of the current content a couple of times, I would say that the bit you're doing now is probably the best bit.
Right.
So the original story is better than the current new bits. And the reason I say that is because there's more variation in it.
Right.
So you're either Republic or you're Imperial.
Yeah.
So that's two stories.
Yeah.
And then within those, you've got your stories around the profession, the career that you've chosen.
Yeah.
So there's lots and lots of different stories and lots of stuff that you can get through. As soon as you get into the new stuff, the Eternal Throne stuff, you've got one story.
Right,
regardless of how you play it.
Right.
Regardless of whether you were Imperial or Republic.
So everybody goes through one story.
Everybody goes through one story. And while it's good, and I enjoyed it,
you're not going to want to put all your characters through it.
You're not. Exactly. I've got to the point where I've got lots of characters I could put through it. There's no point, because it's the same. And it does make it easier for them to add extra material, because they're writing one lot of stuff, lot of voice actors.
Mm.
But you've lost that replayability, and they've put lots of effort into endgame stuff like grinding and all that stuff. But
none of us have ever been into that.
So I'm at the point where I've got lots of toons that are at that level, but I've only taken two toons, one toon to the very end.
Yeah.
One part way through, and then I've kind of lost interest in it a bit.
Yeah, that's a bit of a shame. But I mean, it's not like there isn't enough other content in that game.
Exactly.
To make it
it's
worth
much
going
better
out,
to go to the beginning and play from the beginning than it is to create a, because you can create a level 60 and now a level 65 to catch up. But actually, why do that when it's much more interesting to go to the very start?
Well, that was sort of it. You know, I don't want to jump into, I didn't want to create a level 65 for it. I've already got one character that's, I think, level 60 and I don't want to
I've even cancelled my sub.
Right.
I will resub again when new content comes out because I do want to keep up with it. And I have been enjoying it, but because I've played pretty much most of the, I've got so many different tunes now, and I just the replayableness. You can be good or you can be bad. That's the only real difference.
Yeah.
But actually, ultimately, it makes no difference to the outcomes. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a bit interesting because the next bit, it looks to me like the next bit that's going to come out very soon is you basically fall out with the Republic because you end up like king of the world, right?
Right, yeah.
You're going to fall out with the Republic or, and the Empire or one or the other. And it does, I do wonder whether you have to pick sides again. And it would be very good to get back to that Empire-Republic thing because that's a bit that I've been really missing.
Mm, okay.
That would be great to do, but because I can't see where it goes now because you've kind of overthrown Valkorion.
Right, okay.
Properly killed Valkorion and you are literally on the throne yourself.
Right, okay.
And so
what are you
going to do?
Yeah, where do you go from
there? Where do you go from there?
So, that'll be interesting. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying playing through it and it gives me something to kind of play through. And the other thing that I've got circling is I've got a Elder Scrolls Online.
I've downloaded that.
I haven't really, I played it a little bit and then kind of moved away from it. Not because it was particularly bad or anything. It was just, I think something else came along. And
I haven't tried it. So there's a whole load of free-to-play stuff.
Yeah.
Certainly on the Xbox.
Yeah.
There's the Dungeons & Dragons one.
Yeah,
Neverwinter, whatever it is.
Neverwinter, yes. That's quite good fun.
It is good fun.
I'll play that.
It's pretty basic, but it's nice looking.
I mean, it's a few years old now, but it's
it's
good fun.
So I've been playing that. I've still been playing Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek's always good fun.
And the Xbox version of it has now caught up with the PC version.
Okay,
so when I first started playing it, when I first downloaded it, it was like, it wasn't as far as it was when I stopped playing the PC version. So I went back on the PC version. I was wow, things have really moved on. But now it's kind of where they're in the same place, more or less.
That's good. There's the DC Online on kicking around on there.
It is. I've tried it.
It's not brilliant.
I didn't love it.
No,
I didn't love
it. It's not good. I mean, well, it's not bad. It's just not great. You know, there are better things out there, I think.
Yeah, no, I didn't love it.
It's good for a bit, but
it made me a bit nostalgic for, you know, the old days.
Yes. City of Heroes.
Yeah, City of Heroes. What's that? I smell spandex. That sort of comments from passers by, but it's brilliant. But
yeah,
it made me nostalgic for City of Heroes, but no, it's not that great.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So, I mean, that's been my main kind of gaming thing. In other things that are out this week, of course, it was Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah,
so
lots of pictures.
So, Last Jedi trailer.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
It doesn't give me enough, man. It's not enough. It's like, I know it's a teaser, but it's teasing me too much.
Yeah.
It's just not enough there.
I thought it was interesting not having Luke speak at all in the first movie and give him basically all the lines in this trailer.
More lines in the trailer than he had in the movie.
The thing about the Jedi should end, I thought, was kind of an interesting point and will be debated, I'm sure.
I'm sure that's just his point of view at that point in time, and then she'll change his mind or something will happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, the poster's quite kind of interesting, although, as you pointed out when I posted it, it does look somewhat like Thundercats. The poster, I thought, was quite interesting because you've got the blue lightsaber going into the red.
Yeah.
So there has been some speculation about the Jedi needs to end. It's more the Jedi needs to change.
Yeah, and that's interesting because that's actually a theme in Old Republic in the expansion part of it. And it's one of the arguments for them, you know, getting rid of the good and the bad side and you can play through is that there's a whole section where you've got a leader of the Jedi and a leader of the Sith working together and teaching your character that they have to kind of balance. It's about balancing the Force rather than one or the other, and the Force is unbalanced and the only way to win is to understand this balance. And that could be a similar thing.
That is quite possible, I think. Maybe that's where they're going with it.
And that harks back to that to the original, not the original, but the prequels, where they're talking about the legend of the kid that will bring balance to the Force.
Yeah.
They never said that he'd win and be a Jedi. They just said that he would bring balance to the Force.
Yes. And maybe that's there is a lot of talk about what balance means. And yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
Kylo Ren's mask all screwed up.
Yes. I thought it was Vader's maybe originally, but no, it's not. It's Kylo Ren's mask.
Yeah.
And I mean, admittedly, at this point, there is no need for him to have it.
No. It's probably just a temper tantrum again.
Yeah.
Isn't
and
it
was, yeah, you know, the guy's got a temper. So maybe that's why he's crushed it. But
he did look in the brief flash of him that you get. He looked kind of like he did in the previous one. I was kind of hoping he'd be a bit more beat up and have some cybernetics going on.
Yeah, maybe. But so I don't know. We'll see. But I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, overall, a nice little teaser. There's been a few other bits and pieces come out from Star Wars this weekend as well, which we'll come on to. But the other thing as well, which I can now talk about, is American Gods, because the embargo has lifted today.
Right, and that looks amazing.
It's phenomenal.
Really?
It's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, this is... It's interesting it's going out on Amazon Prime over here, because I'm astonished that one of the main networks didn't go for it and didn't pick it up. And
Amazon have deeper pockets, though.
Well, probably, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's probably why.
It's Amazon or Sky, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, but I'm surprised Sky Atlantic didn't pick it up as something as another potential replacement. I suppose I think part of it might be the fact that, you know, they've already got the deals with HBO and Showtime, so maybe that's why they wouldn't go for it, because it's Stars. But it's Game of Thrones level, kind of.
Really?
I just in terms of not in terms of budget to make it, I don't think, but it's beautifully, beautifully shot. It's weird, it's interesting, it's different, it's unlike anything else you've seen. Have you read the book?
No, I haven't. This is one of those ones, kind of like Expanse, where it's do I go out and get the books or...
Yeah.
I quite enjoy watching the telly, I'll be honest.
Yeah,
I know
everyone
goes, books are great, but I love watching the telly. No, well, I'm lazy, right? But
I'm sort of the same.
I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I sort of said this to some of the guys. They said, oh, you're a big fan of the book. And I'm like, well, to be honest, I haven't read the book.
No.
And now there's a TV show. I sort of don't want to read the book. It's like I've never read Game of Thrones.
Read the book,
you know,
what will happen if you read the book? It'll be like Lord of the Rings all over again.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll just annoy you. So, no, there's an interesting scene, which I believe is ripped directly from the book, with Bilquis, who is one of the old goddesses, which those that know the book will probably know what I'm talking about. But there is a scene that they recreate for the TV show. And it's probably a scene that you read the book and go, well, that's never going to go into a TV show. And they have most definitely recreated it, and it's quite spectacular. But there's some very interesting stuff going on. It's basically a road trip movie with Mr. Wednesday, who is Odin, which I think is fairly well known, and Ricky Whittle's character, Shadow Moon. And it's sort of a road trip between those two, with Mr. Wednesday going round and trying to recruit the rest of the old gods in an oncoming battle with the new gods.
Yeah.
So you get to meet them. You also get to meet various new gods. I think Technical Boy is the only one that shows up in the first episode, as far as I remember. But you get to meet these guys, and the new gods are kind of irritating, to me anyway. But the old gods are far more interesting and cooler, as far as I'm concerned. But I thought it was absolutely astounding, and looks like it's going to be one of the best things on TV this year. I really enjoyed it.
So
it's only 8 episodes the first season, but they're going to be spectacular. I'm fairly confident. Really, really liked it. So yeah, it's one of those things that there's a lot of good stuff on Amazon Prime at the moment, and I would go out and get Amazon Prime just to get American Gods right now.
Yeah.
It's well worth it.
It took me a while to get it. And to be fair, I probably only got it for Grand Tour.
Yeah.
But now I wasn't that bothered with Grand Tour by the end of it. And I'm just really glad I've got it. I probably would be getting it anyway now.
Because
that just looks amazing. I mean, all the footage I've seen so far just looks amazing.
Yeah, it's just
absolutely
stunning.
Spot on in terms of the kind of thing that I like.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you've got, I mean, yeah, well, on Amazon Prime, you've also got like things like Sneaky Pete, you've got Lucifer, you've got Man in the High Castle. I mean, there's so much.
I haven't watched Sneaky Pete, but Lucifer is.
Yeah, I know it's not a good adaptation of the book, no. But it's a good adaptation for TV.
And some of it is stuff that I wouldn't really enjoy. But when they got together, even I went yay, and then I thought, what am I doing? How romantic!
Yes, what? You're the most cynical person I know.
So you know, it was good.
That's funny. One of the other things on Amazon Prime, actually, which I don't know whether you watched, but Oasis, which is the sci-fi pilot they've got on there at the moment.
I haven't.
Which has Richard Madden from Game of Thrones played the guy who was King of the North and got killed? Him. And
he's in a few things.
Yeah, it's him, and with his natural Scottish accent. I'm assuming that's his natural Scottish accent. And Mark Addy.
No, he's fake Sheffield accent.
Yeah. Yeah. And is it Mark Addy, the guy that played the king in season one?
Yeah.
So it's those are two of the characters in this pilot episode. And it's essentially, you start off on Earth, set in the nearish future. It's set in London. The lead character is a priest. They've started this Oasis project, which is on an unnamed other planet, which takes X amount of years to get there. So he gets a note from his friend who is running this Oasis project, and it's this kind of garbled message that basically says, you know, I know I wanted to set this up without religion involved, but I feel now the way things are going, we need a priest. You have to come.
He's never a good sign.
His wife on Earth is dying of something or other, and she eventually dies, so he sort of thinks screw it and gets on the ship and gets sent to this other planet. And the planet itself, there is something strange going on. People seem to be having visions of things, of dead people and of events that have happened and that sort of stuff.
What,
so
what was that? There was a series.
Yeah, Outcast, you're thinking of, on BBC.
Yeah,
there is an element of that to it.
Right.
It's not quite as detective-like led as that sort of was. But it's one of those Amazon pilot things that they do. Yeah, a very interesting kind of pilot thing. I'm looking forward to seeing a bit more of that. I thought it was quite good because it left a lot of things sort of unanswered, as you'd expect from the pilot episode. So.
Yeah. Are there spires that they have to activate in a vault they have to go in?
No, not quite that. No. But yes, a very interesting pilot that. I quite like that. Other stuff this week, Doctor Who, of course, came back. Did you see the...
I did.
Yes. What did you think?
It was a slow burner, right? It was a very slow burner. It's Doctor Who.
Yeah. I sort of know
and
what
that's
you mean.
Not a bad thing. That's such a good thing. But it wasn't anything I didn't expect. The usual thing of not really knowing what the hell's going on until right near the end.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice. There's all the Jeopardy and all of that stuff. But it was quite a slow one.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing to start because it wasn't kind of, you know, all driving action stuff. I do really like Peter Capaldi as that sort of older doctor. And I thought setting it in a university was kind of an interesting idea as well.
Yeah.
With him kind of starting off there. There's, of course, the other thing that's come out from a report from the Mirror. So I take it extremely with a pinch of salt. But this idea that Chris Marshall is possibly going to be the next Doctor from Chris Marshall from Death in Paradise and Love Actually and various other things. I mean, fine. I don't think he would be bad at it. I'm
a bit surprised if it is, if they've gone for the white middle-aged male.
Yeah, it is a bit obvious, which, I don't know, you know, he's...
And we do, there have been, with every change of Doctor, there's been a dead cert rumour that's been incorrect.
Yeah.
Almost deliberate, I think.
And it's the way this has been leaked. The other thing is there have been a lot of stories coming out basically saying that the regeneration this time is odd. There's something strange going to happen with the regeneration.
Right.
And Peter said this himself. And I think Moffat made some comments about it not being straightforward. And Peter's also said that he's made very careful to say he shot his death, but hasn't made anything about the fact that he shot the regeneration yet. But they did show a regeneration thing in the coming soon clip at the end, as well as the master showing up, obviously.
Which is amazing.
Which is brilliant. Yeah. I think Johnson's going to be fabulous. But so that's sort of interesting to me. I think that the whole Chris Marshall thing, I think is a bit of a misdirect.
Yeah, I think it's a decoy.
I mean, I think he's probably in it. I think there's a good chance he's in it. I just think somebody's got the wrong end of the stick somewhere and he might not be the next iteration of the Doctor. I think there's a bit of smoke and mirrors going on somewhere. Again, I mean, if he is, it's fine. I think he'd be perfectly fine.
I just think they're missing a trick.
Yeah, I'm not entirely convinced, because Peter's also said that he's got to go and shoot the Christmas episode, which he's also in.
Yeah.
So either they're going to end up doing a sort of two Doctor thing to go with the two Master thing, maybe. Previous Doctor and I don't know, maybe. Which would be an interesting one, because they have done Doctor.
Multiple Doctors
before. But
I think in a Christmas episode.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, yeah. They did it for I think the only time they've done it recently was for the 50th anniversary special. So, I don't know. There are ways that they could do it, but the fact that they're making this thing about, well, the regeneration is different this time, that could be interesting. Maybe we're going to have two Doctors for like half the season or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
I think that there's, over the course of the last few seasons, few Doctors, I think it's been really good. Yeah. And they've opened up all these opportunities, but just to go to another pretty obvious
choice
just feels
I know what you mean. So I don't know. I mean, I like the
Doctor's
episode.
Got a daughter.
So yeah,
that's a thing that's just been left hanging forever.
Yes. Yeah, well that is it. And they are sort of they are, I mean, you look at the photos that were on the desk in the opening episode, and you know, they are talking a bit more about the family thing and whether there's something coming from that, I don't know. There are lots of things that they could do with it. So we'll see how the rest of the series goes. But I thought it was a perfectly good opener, I think. Mm. And I think Bill's going to be an interesting companion. I think she's quite fun.
Yeah.
You know, they've dispelled any possibility of a romantic entanglement at the moment. So,
which was just...
Yeah.
I'm not sure I've got on with that anyway.
Yeah, because exactly, which is good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought it was really good fun and I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of it. And I want to know what is going to go on with the regeneration, because there is something hinky there, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, lots of interesting stuff in there. I think we've been talking long enough on that sort of thing. So let's move on to some film and TV news. So we'll kick off the film and TV news this week with some renewals. First one is American Gods, which apparently has already been renewed for a second season, even though the first season hasn't come out yet. So there's a good sign for you.
Yeah, that's good. That's a vote of confidence.
Yes, definitely.
Clearly, yeah.
Grace and Frankie being renewed for a fourth season, which I still haven't got around to watching, but everybody tells me is brilliant. That's a Netflix series. Shadowhunters is back for a third series. Nashville is back for a sixth series, which I think some people were quite surprised by, given the events of series five, apparently. But it's not a show I watch, but that's the impression I get from bits and pieces that I've been reading. Poldark has been renewed for a fourth series, apparently. Mm. Again,
disappointed noises.
Yeah, so there'll be lots of women out there that are quite happy about that, I'm sure. The Magicians renewed for a third season as well. Fear the Walking Dead coming back for a fourth season, which is interesting because that's been a bit shaky in the ratings.
Yeah.
The Path, which is the show Aaron Paul went on to do after Breaking Bad, that's been renewed for a third season, which shows on Amazon over here, but again, not one I've watched. And one of the news that came out from Star Wars Celebration was Star Wars Rebels will be ending at its fourth season.
This is just, it's got to end, right?
Because
it was only set like 5 years before.
Yeah, as we were talking about earlier with, you know, Rogue One, it has a limited shelf life because you can only, there is only so much stories you can tell.
And there were references to it in Rogue One as well.
Yeah, there were. I mean, the weather was yeah, characters that they've
named
used in,
characters. Yeah, and yeah. Then, but yeah, I'm.
I mean, Sol Guerrero is a character that came out of, well, the Clone Wars cartoon originally, but has shown up in Rogue One as well.
I do like the way that Disney have joined them all together like that.
Oh, I know. I mean, I know people got very uppity about them throwing away the expanded universe, but they've not thrown it away. They've just put it to one side and then folded bits of it back in again.
Yeah, and I think that's genius.
Yeah.
That's absolutely genius. What's going to happen to them? It's just really...
Well, this is it. I mean, because...
Are they all going to die? Is it going to be a Rogue One? Are they all going to die at the end of the last episode?
Well, I don't know.
It's a kid's program. You can't kill them all off.
Yeah. It's loved by kids and adults as well. So what are you going to do at the end of it? Because you've got two Jedis who never show up again. So at least so far, anyway. Yeah. They haven't shown up anywhere. So what happens to them? You've also got Rogue One, which had Ghost in the space sequence.
It did.
So that would imply that somebody, the ship at least, survives. So some of them may still survive.
Yeah.
So...
Well, it depends when it ends.
Well,
it might not end. It might be a little bit of overlap into...
Yeah, maybe it overlaps into that battle.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? It's really interesting. And I mean, it's not been cancelled. It was Dave Filoni's decision, who's the co-creator. It was basically the person in charge.
They are going to bring out another animated series.
Yes. It's not going to be the end of animated series. They are apparently, certainly from what Dave Filoni was saying in that panel, it does sound like they're working on something else. It's just that he wanted to end this on his own terms, having not had the chance to finish Clone Wars how he wanted to. He wanted to end this on his own terms, and as he said, there is only so much story that we can tell with these particular characters. So I think what we're going to see is an end of Star Wars Rebels and then something else which will probably be equally as brilliant but set in a different slot of timeline somewhere.
I'm still reeling from the end of the previous season.
Do
you know what I mean? They can't do that to me again.
Phenomenally well written, and the way that they're folding in other characters and they're bringing in people from the films and people back from the Legends side. I mean, bringing Thrawn in was just fantastic,
amazing.
So using the original writer as well to do it,
and it is so well written.
Yeah,
and if you compare it to early Clone Wars episodes, it has come on so much.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a kids' program.
Yeah.
And then it became, it seemed to find its feet and then it got canned.
But then
they really, everything they've learned, they've totally poured into Rebels.
Yeah. I mean, Rebels is definitely aimed at a family audience of things that, you know, fathers and mothers can watch with their kids, you know, so much more. It's one of those things that's a family audience disguised as a kids show.
Yeah.
So. You know, I will be sad to see it go, but I'm also very interested to see what they do next. So, and I do wonder if they're going to end up folding some of those characters in further into other films, and we get to see some of them in live action at some point, which will be quite interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool.
You know, particularly people like Ahsoka and Sabine and, you know, those sort of characters would be interesting to see if they're still kicking around. So, I don't know.
Well, they're young enough.
Yeah, exactly. They're young enough. It's just whether they survived everything, you know. So that's going to be interesting. Sticking with Marvel and Disney and that sort of stuff, there's been some casting announcements for Deadpool, which technically is Fox, actually. It's Fox and Marvel. But they announced that Josh Brolin would be playing Cable in Deadpool 2. And Cable being sort of Deadpool's on-off partner, because Cable and Deadpool have their own book together. Thoughts on this casting?
I think it's good.
Yeah.
I think it's good. The humour in Deadpool, I know it is childish humour.
Oh, yes, but
Josh Brolin fits in there. Absolutely, right? I'm just thinking about it makes me laugh. I mean, it's such a funny movie that it's such a shame I can't share it with the kids.
Yes, it is such a pity because, Josh Brolin's, he's done comic book stuff before. Yeah. I mean, he was in Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. He played Jonah Hex in the 2010 movie. He was in Men in Black 3 as the young Agent K, as well as being sort of an Oscar winner for like Milk and No Country for Old Men and Sicario and Hail Caesar. So, I mean, he's done things like Hail Caesar and Men in Black as well. So, you know, he's used to doing
comedic stuff.
I think he's a really good fit. I mean, there was rumours at one point that Pierce Brosnan might do it, which was a sort of interesting choice, but I think Josh Brolin really fits
the role. Yeah, I really do.
And of course, the other thing he's playing for, the big thing, is that he's playing Thanos on the Disney Marvel side.
Yeah.
So he's in two Marvel films. I mean, admittedly, you would never know that it's him because he's basically CGI'd over.
Yeah.
And it's primarily, I'm assuming, voice work, but there may be some facial stuff. But he's major player in both Disney's and Fox's Marvel franchise at this point, which is kind of cool. Cable's an interesting character as well. He's the son of Cyclops and Madeline Pryor, who was a clone of Jean Grey, who I'm not going to even attempt to explain any more than that.
I expect there to be a sequence in the film going over that and making it funny.
Yes, I'm sure there will be
and
some sort of
jokes about his name as well.
Yes, I'm sure. His powers are telepathy, telekinesis, and he can manipulate technology. He's also an expert marksman, has cybernetic enhancements, has a kind of glowing eye, and I think half his body's sort of cybernetic. So, and he's effectively from the future, I believe, which is why he's older than any version of Scott Summers we've ever seen. So, it's one of those things that I'm sure they'll just be like, look, just go with it. It's Deadpool. You're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you get away with a lot, but it was such a good film. Everything about it.
It was so funny. It's so well put together. So it's been directed by a guy called David Leitch, who is primarily known for doing the stunt work. He's directed a couple of little things, but primarily he's a stunt coordinator. So it's going to be interesting to see what sort of ridiculous things that they managed to pull off in this.
Yeah. What I hope they don't do is pay too much attention to some of the serious reviews in like The Guardian and things like that.
Yeah,
we talked
yeah.
about Deadpool and we're a bit snotty about it. Saying, oh, it's really childish humour. And
they're not going to lose that. It's Ryan Reynolds.
Do.
Have you seen Ryan Reynolds in interviews?
Exactly.
It's just, there's no way.
Well, the thing that I think these reviews are completely missing was the point that, have they read any of the comics?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is the way Deadpool is. It's childish, stupid humor. That's the way it is. It's supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they maintain that and they stick to their guns.
I'm sure they will do. Due out next year, Deadpool 2, apparently, at some point. So,
I look forward to, I hope to do the same sort of thing with the trailers. The trailers.
Oh, the marketing around that was just amazing. The posters just brilliant.
It's a gift.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that, definitely. Another bit of casting, Jude Law to play Albus Dumbledore in Fantastic Beasts 2, apparently. So said when I posted this on the website, it's number 46 on phrases I never thought I'd say about Jude Law.
He's a great actor.
I mean, he is. He's an interesting actor because he's flown very much. He's A-list, but he flies as kind of a minus list. He just sort of manages to kind of bumble away underneath
it. It means he gets to do
it.
Interesting things, though.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not pigeonholed. He doesn't just do the things where he's got no choice about what's going on because it's been essentially written by focus groups.
Yeah.
He gets to do the interesting movies.
Yeah. And originally I was like, really? But, you know, because we're so used to Dumbledore being the old guy.
Yeah.
Actually, as a young Dumbledore, I mean, he can do this sort of stuff. He's, upper class, sort of British, slightly mischievous. I think he'll be quite good. I mean, you look at it, you know, he did those Sherlock Holmes movies, which I thought were perfectly acceptable, good fun. You know, I think he'll be interesting in this, I think.
The only thing I hope they don't do is turn him into that sort of British English caricature character.
Yeah.
Like a kind of Dirk Gently
sort of
thing. That would kind of.
Yes. I mean, we don't know
I'm
sure we won't because, I mean, it's been written by JK.
Yeah.
So JK's writing the script again. Infuriatingly, that woman not only has can write multi-million best-selling books, then goes on to become a screenwriter on, just because she can.
And owns Twitter.
Absolutely
owns Twitter.
Oh, just phenomenal on her Twitter as well. So her and James Blunt, I think. James Blunt's Twitter accounts are just amazing.
Worth having Twitter just to follow the two of them.
They are brilliant. So, I really enjoyed the first Fantastic Beasts movie. I thought it was really well put together. I mean, very different from the Harry Potter stuff, but,
Yeah, and that's a good thing because it's no secret that I'm not a mad fan of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
But this wasn't, it wasn't too bad.
No.
I'm possibly the wrong person to talk to
about
this film.
Well, it's not really aimed at us, is it, particularly? But, you know, I thought it was a perfectly good, fun family movie. You know, really enjoyed it.
So. I love fantasy stuff as well.
Yeah.
But I've just never quite.
No, I know. I mean, the Harry Potter stuff, personally, it gets better as the kids get older. And the acting gets better as the kids get older.
Yeah, you know? True. So, there's always been that thing where I've never really liked anything that's got kids in.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. It's not the movie for you, is it? So, yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting bit of casting. To say it's only known as Fantastic Beasts 2. It won't be known as Fantastic Beasts when it comes out. It'll be the Aardvark of Truth or Kettle of Doom.
And then, obviously, the screenplay will be released as a book and everybody will buy that. And it'll be a bestseller as well.
Yeah.
Because just she could...
J.K. Rowling's license to print money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just crazy. And the last news story we've got is... John Cleese is returning to
on the subject
BBC.
Of money.
Yeah, on the subject of needing money. John Cleese is returning to the BBC in a new sitcom called Edith with Alison Steadman and Jason Watkins. I mean, I don't know. He has said, this is the most enjoyable script I've been sent in the last 100 years. It will also be particularly nice to work with Alison again since we joined forces on Clockwise all that time ago. So, I mean, Alison Steadman, for those that don't know, she was in Gavin and Stacey. She's also in Orphan Black, which is due back reasonably soon as well. And Jason Watkins is from Taboo most recently. He's in W1A, he was in Trollid, and he was in Being Human, played Henrik in Being Human as well. I mean, it's a great cast. And the thing is, John Cleese generally does things for cash these days.
And he's openly admitted it.
And he has,
And he's
he
only really started working again since his last divorce.
Yes. Well, he did call his last stand-up tour the Alimony Tour.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, so it'll be interesting.
And that tour wasn't universally loved.
No.
It was panned.
Yeah, in places. They recorded a version of it. It was quite funny from what I seem to remember. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what this actually ends up being like. I mean, it's the setup is pretty standard setup in that it's an elderly couple, Edith played by Steadman. She's a widow for some years. She has children that live locally and drop by regularly. She enjoyed daily visits from Phil, who is played by John Cleese, who is an old boyfriend who lives across the road. Phil dreams of marrying Edith and the pair of them want to up sticks and move abroad. After months of turning him down, she finally says yes, but then her 50-year-old son, Roger, played by Watkins, turns up on the doorstep announcing he's left his wife and his kids and his good job at the bank and has come home in an attempt to find his lost happiness again. So it sort of then puts him on a collision course with Edith and Phil, who's massively upset at this 50-year-old who's just turned up and
he's gonna
destroyed all their plans.
He's going to be a Victor Meldrew character, isn't
yes,
he?
So it's almost a sort of Victor Meldrew kind of character that's really annoyed at the younger people in this case being 50 years old, but I don't know. I mean, sure it'll do brilliantly.
My parents will probably love it.
It seems to be aimed at that sort of older generation that are watching things like, you know, the return of the Open All Hours, still
and
Open
hasn't
All Hours
been,
and that
there hasn't really been a decent series for that audience for a while, like that One Foot in the Grave
that sort of stuff. And I'm sure it'll be hugely popular.
And dredging my memory, memory of these programmes.
Yeah. Keeping Up Appearances is the other one that does come to mind, It's got Jessica Hines in it, who was in Royal Family, Hitting the Lady, W1A. Anna Reid from Last Tango and Al Zoo. Various other people. James Cosmo from SSGB and Game of Thrones. So, I mean, there's...
It looks like quite an expensive lineup.
Yeah, I mean, there is quite a big, expensive cast there. So, I mean, they've got a really good team together. And I think the thing is, if you're going to come up with a traditional sitcom these days, you need to have a really, really strong, interesting cast.
Yeah, true.
So, although it's possibly not something that I may go out of my way to watch, I'm sure it'll be hugely popular. And it's got a great cast behind it. If it knocks Mrs. Brown's Boys off the top spot, that can only be a good thing.
Oh, don't even get me started on that. I'm just watching thinking
this is awful.
I know what you mean, I'm sorry, it is
So that's all the news for this week. We've got an interview next. So this week's interview is with the brilliantly named Tree Adams. Tree's a composer. He currently scores the ITV hit Lethal Weapon, and he also scores the 100 as well, which has just come back. Previously worked on Legends, the Sean Bean short-lived show, Perception. He worked on Franklin and Bash and Californication as well. He worked as a touring musician for 10 years in the 90s with his band The Hatters, later moved on to writing music for games, TV and films. He's also performs with The Howling Vaults, which is a bluesy funk band with heavy grooves, swampy soul guitar and fat horns, apparently, according to the press release.
Fat horn.
Exactly. which is kind of a super group made up of a bunch of different sort of high profile musicians that have been in other things. So
I might have to look that up now.
Yeah. It sounds very cool. So they're called the Howling Vaults. But yeah, so we got a chance to sit down and talk to Tree, mainly about the Lethal Weapon and the 100, mostly is what we were kind of talking about. But we cover some of his other stuff as well. So here's the interview with Tree. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, Tree.
Hey, what's happening?
All right, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming on and spending a bit of time to chat to me. It's very kind of you.
Excellent. It's always a treat.
Should we start off with a little bit of background? How did you get into the industry in the first place?
Well, I had been a recording artist. I was in a band, and I did that for a good decade or so. This band, The Hatters. It was like, you know, the Mad Hatters originally, and then they shortened it to The Hatters because somebody had a copyright on that or trademark. Or whatever. And I guess I had met some guys who were doing work with computers back in the day. It was like, oh, wow, we're writing music with computers. Like the mid-90s. And I was like, wow, so you could create like the sound of a whole orchestra by yourself in your little apartment in New York. I was in New York at the time. And I thought that sounded kind of cool and intriguing, the idea of being able to kind of mock it all up in that way. And then a buddy of mine was a fan of my band's, and he had an independent film, this guy, Sam Sokolow. And he said, hey, you want to, you know, take a shot at writing music for this? And I was like, sure, let's try it out. And I think growing up, I was classically trained, and, you know, I had a lot of musicians in my family who were, you know, opening up different worlds for me. I would say, like, my grandmother was, she would play me Peter and the Wolf and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, explain how music was sort of telling stories. And I always sort of liked the idea of how, you know, music could provide this little substrata of story with the films I was watching or TV shows. And I loved all that stuff, you know, Star Wars, Close Encounters, all that. I was really into the music there, The Godfather, you know, I was a Star Trek kid, you know, I loved all that stuff. And yeah. So I think I was intrigued by the idea of not only kind of exploring some of these other worlds sonically and the idea of storytelling in music, but, you know, I had been in this basically kind of blues band, you know, I mean, blues, groove, sort of funk type of band. Like, we were opening for bands like the Allman Brothers and things like that. It was right. That kind of long-haired rock dudes, you know. And I got a little sick of being the same dude every night, you know what I mean? We would do this 100 days a year. We would get, you know, get in a motorhome or a van or whatever it was, and we would tour. And I mean, it was fun for the first little while, but then after a while, it just became rather tedious and I think a little limiting musically. You know, and I sing, and that was cool, the songwriting and the singing part of it. But yeah, it's more about wanting to explore, you know, other sounds and stuff. So I think that's what drew me in. And my girlfriend at the time, and now wife, Delphine, she was like, hey, you know, there's more opportunity in Los Angeles. Maybe we go there and give it a try. And so, yeah, we moved out here in 98. And I've just been hammering away at it ever since.
Yeah. So, I mean, you start off with like indie films and eventually moving to TV. How did you get into the TV the first time, and what was sort of the biggest shock landing on your first TV gig?
Yeah, it was a very difficult thing to break into. I think, and I didn't do it the way that I would recommend people do it. I think it's a great business to sort of do, you know, the apprentice route, you know, where you work for another composer and they show you the ropes, they show you how to handle like politics. And then sometimes you get the runoff, like if they get busy, you know, and then they kind of might bless you into a gig and share a gig with you. And then kind of eventually you fly on your own.
The Zimmer system.
That's how a lot of guys have done it. And, you know, I mean, certainly Hans Zimmer has like probably ushered in, you know, a whole generation of composers at this point. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of assistants over the years and, you know, have helped get them going too in ways. And that's really rewarding to see and fun. My situation was a little different in that I wasn't sure whether I was going to be doing the songwriting, producing thing or the composing thing. It hadn't really taken shape yet. Somebody early on said to me, look, you know, it's great that you can create, you know, classical music for these scenes, but you're using samples. You don't have an orchestra doing this. You're not going to compete with the reels we're getting from, you know, John Williams and Hans Zimmer or whatever. You know what I mean? So you have to bloom where you're planted and do what you're good at. And they were like, you know, your guitar stuff works like that. You could get in with that. So I was like, all right, I'll try that. You know, I would send demos and songs and things just cold to every production company I could, every studio I could. It was a pretty, you had to have a thick skin because it was just, you know, sending stuff into the void or getting rejected or, you know, doing something on spec and not getting it all the time. Very difficult for a while. And then I think I had a big break, maybe it was 99 or so. David Grossman, who was the head of music at Paramount at the time,
right.
He calls me on a Friday night at like 6 p.m. He's like, Tree, you've been sending us all this music. You know, I understand you're trying to make something happen here. We have an opportunity. If you would like to write a theme song for a sitcom on spec, but it would be due tomorrow morning and there's no guarantee of anything. And I was like, come on, let's do it. You know, I jump in. Next morning, I get the call. Well, what you did is good, but we're not going to use it. And I'm like, okay. He's like, the head of the show likes it enough that he'll get together with you and you guys could write a few things together. He's a songwriter as well. I was like, okay, cool. So I go to the producer's house and his name was Jonathan Katz. I don't know if you ever saw the show Dr. Katz.
Yeah.
It's him, Jonathan Katz, the stand-up comedian. You know, he and like David Mamet are, you know, best friends. He is this sort of incredibly funny, quirky character. Just a great dude. I go to his house. He's doing stand-up the whole time. I'm like on the floor. I cannot play my guitar. We write three little 30-second songs. We think they're good. We record them. We hand them in. Monday morning, I get the call again. So, Tree, we're not going to use anything you wrote. I'm like, okay, cool. And they're like, but, because it turns out the star of the show, he's got a friend. They're going to do the song. I'm like, okay, cool. But have you ever thought about writing music for a comedy? And I'm like, I'd love that. And they were like, all right, cool. And so I got this contract that was sort of a one-off, like where every week, you know, the deal was set for every week that a VHS tape would arrive at my studio.
Yeah.
It wasn't guaranteed that it would be there the next week. So for 22 episodes, I was like on pins and needles, like hoping the next tape would come up. And that was this sitcom called Raising Dad with Bob Saget. And that was the beginning, you know, and then it was a series of like, okay, somebody on that, you know, enjoyed working with me, gave me a shot at another one. I had a shootout to do like a sitcom. What was it? Reba. I managed to sort of win the shootout and then got to work with her for a few years. And I got on In Plain Sight, and then my buddy brought me in to do Californication with him, and we did that as a team for 7 years. And then, you know, more and more of the dramas. I think the big turning point maybe was, you know, I was doing a lot of independent films along the way, and I would always take the money and put it all into doing an orchestra.
Yeah.
Like whenever it called for it. And so by the time I was doing this show called Perception with my friend Ken Biller.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I had enough of a reel of orchestral music to show that I could do this, you know, and soundtracks out there. And he had been a showrunner on Star Trek Next Generation.
Right. Yeah.
From that school of like, hey, we're going to do live orchestra for everything, union on the level. And that was how he wanted to roll on that show. And so for 3 years or three seasons, you know, I got to do a full orchestra for every episode, which was to me.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it was the real training. You know, that's where you learn, because you got to deliver 40 minutes of orchestral music every week, mix it, conduct, or I wasn't conducting on that, you know, mix it, stem it, do the notes. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And if you learn how to handle that, you know, from there, you're kind of like, anything's easy.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I mentioned at the start, there's a couple of shows particularly, which I was quite interested in. Californication, you mentioned you were on. Franklin and Bash, you were on as well, which was a great fun show. But I mean, the 100, that he's one that's still running over here, and really interesting show. And you actually joined on season 3 as well, which is slightly out of the ordinary. So how did all that come about?
Well, I think somewhere along the line, I kind of got the reputation as being somebody who could kind of come in the middle of a series and sort of help either, you know, fix anything that was wrong in the kind of workflow, or like help kind of create, you know, a thematic approach.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, there was some combination of that. I don't want to speak about what happened on that show or any other one that I've been on before I got there, as a composer, I've been on every side of it. You know, we get swapped in and out, and I know the politics and the kind of parameters that we're dealing with. Is a lot of it's way beyond our control, and all we can do is go in and make good music, look people in the eye, and try to deliver what their vision is. You know, do the mind reading. But you know, somewhere along the line, you know, in the past decade or so, like I kind of have been used as a guy to come in and, you know, in the middle of things. In the case of the 100, Jason Rothenberg, the showrunner, he really liked the sound of the show that they had. But, you know, I think that he felt there was an opportunity to do more with the storytelling to kind of accompany the characters and the worlds, because it's a very rich world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have, you know, I mean, literally, they have their own, like, language. You know, they've got this Trigetta slang language that they've come up with. They've got, you know, these different subphylum of grounder species. You know, you have all of these characters that also, in their own right, kind of get their own themes. And the subject matter is sort of, and I'm not going to speak about the season that's about to happen, but it's allowing, one of the great things about science fiction, I think, is that it allows us to say something about what's happening in our time now.
Yes.
By showing us a world in the future. And I think, you know, Jason and the writers, they do a great job of, you know, capitalizing on that opportunity. And having a little something to say. There's also like some very interesting, like progressive stuff going on with the characters, you know, in terms of like sexual mores, or it's just in kind of how they're treating each other, what some kids are going through nowadays psychologically, what different attitudes about race and, you know, isolationists versus, you know, being kind of a welcoming community, all of this stuff that's very, you know, that we're all thinking about.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been an exciting thing to work on. And musically, it's being in the future and kind of with such rich imagery, there are huge opportunities for me, not just to work within an orchestral palette, but also, I mean, to use all kinds of exotic, you know, drums from all over the world, to bring in Middle Eastern instruments. We have a lot of like Egyptian oud. I'm playing this season a lot of like guitar viol. I'm pointing to stuff around studio. Persian daff. We've got, you know, all kinds of different things we're bringing in from all over the world. And that's, you don't get to do that on every show, you know.
No, I don't
do that on Franklin and Bash or Californication, you know. So this is kind of fun. And I mean, it's been one of my favorites so far, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, there's so much to work with on that show, because you've got things like the Sky Crew, and then you've got Grounders, you've got the Ice Nation, you've got various sort of, so you've got lots of different factions. Are you creating different themes for each of the different groups? I know you've done it a bit for some of the characters as well, but
yeah, quite often. I mean, I think it's tough. You know, if you come up with a theme for every character, and every clan and every location. You put the characters in a battle situation with the clan, like in another location, and it's like you're going to have like 20 different things clashing on each other. So what it requires is sort of like having certain elements may get a melody or a motif, right? And then certain elements might get just like a texture or a flavor. You know what I mean? And much the way, you know, like when I hear them talk to like the cinematographer about it, they'll be like, well, you know, Ice Nation, we're going to be kind of in more blues, you know, and it, you know, like darker kind of things. Or when we're in the woods with the, you know, with the grounders over here, there's going to be all these earthy tones, and we're going to have like, you know, this kind of the costumes are going to have whatever. It's that same kind of thing where we get a flavor, I guess, for some of these guys. So I wouldn't necessarily say each thing gets a theme, but you know, it's funny because the fans, a lot of times the fans are very engaged on the show, and I really enjoy the dialogue with them. And in a lot of cases they will create like artwork or their own songs based on the score. Like we released the score last year.
I remember
that soundtrack, and people were making their own songs, their own versions of my score. they would put like a cool piece of artwork together to, you know, like an album cover for each song. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the fans, they want to know kind of what is happening on this other layer musically.
Yeah.
You know, which is really cool because they're that engaged. They want to know more about what's happening in the story behind the scenes. So it's fun to have the opportunity to tell the story on that layer as well. You know?
It's interesting with shows, you tend to find in some situations the music is there, but you need it to just sit back and be background. But then you get shows like 100 where I think it's far more present and actually adds to the story, you know?
Yeah. In this case, I mean, it's like another character on the show. I mean, it was very weird last season. You know, I was doing Legends at the same time.
Yeah.
And Legends is the complete opposite where we have, you know, we have a couple little motifs, but really it's almost like I'm a sound effect with the music. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a lot of tones that are sort of shifting and not saying that much about the characters, but just kind of creating a little tension. And, you know, it's very backgroundy, and it's funny to kind of go between those two things. That was tough. Of course, now I'm doing Lethal Weapon at the same time as I'm doing 100, which is also a pretty polar opposite thing, doing a cop show.
Yeah. One of the things with the 100 was the Grounder Anthem, which is a beautiful, haunting bit of music, which has the vocal, which is sung in the Grounder language over the top of it, which how was that put together?
Well, that was a crazy assignment. That was really early on in the show. I hadn't even begun scoring the show. It was over the summer, and I was with my family in France, actually, and we were in Porquerolles, which is like a little island sort of off Toulouse there.
Right.
And I'm in like this little shack, you know, with my wife, kids. And I check my email sporadically. We had the internet. And Jason's like, hey, we're going to need this song. We need a female vocal. We need to shoot to it. So I need you to write it soon. And I'm like, okay, cool. And he's like, I will send you the actual lyrics that we've come up with. And then I'll send you the Tregetis Lang translation.
Yeah.
And you need to sing it in Tregetis Lang. And I was like, okay. So I sang this haunting melody in like this little shack that we were in. I sent it to him. He's like, I love it. Now we got to get the right female vocalist.
Yeah.
And I have a, you know, studio at home where I am now, where I write, but I also have a studio in Atwater Village, which is nearby, and it's sort of more of an office, a bigger space. And I've got three guys who help me out over there. So I sent them my little vocal, which was done on a laptop through the microphone. They made a tempo meter map, and I implemented some ideas about orchestration, and they did a little bit of something behind it to give it some tonality. But really, this is like an a cappella piece. And then we did, you know, almost like a casting call. Like I had them bring in a few different singers.
Yeah.
And then we got the one singer that was sounding best for the demo. This gal sang it. You know, the studio now approves it. And now we got to get the actual person who's going to sing it on set. And it's being done up in Canada. So now they do their own version of the casting call up there. They send it out. They get a bunch of different women coming in knowing this song. That is a bizarre song to know. I mean, and singing it in Tregetis slang. And then they have like a casting call with that. They narrow it down to two or three. They send those videos to me to look at. And I was like, well, this is your gal right here. And I believe her name was Julia, I can't pronounce her last name, Demenchak. I think it's Julia Demenchak. She sang it beautifully. And then the recording session was done up in Canada, and I produced it via Skype. And it was all written out, and she was a beautiful sight reader, and she, you know, she changed a couple things to suit her voice better, and she, you know, everything she did made it better, which was great. And yeah, and that was it. It was a strange thing, but it started in a little shack in Porquerolles.
That's really fun. The other show, as you mentioned earlier, that you've got running at the moment is Lethal Weapon. If I was reading the IMDb correctly, is this another show where you jumped on kind of 8 episodes in or something?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the guys who were doing it before are actually both friends of mine. They're great composers.
Yeah.
You know.
One of those things. Yeah.
Those things, the world, I don't know how it aligns, you know, and I think it just was such that, you know, a change was made. I came in, the producers, they were happy with the sound, basically.
Yeah.
They were happy with what they had, but they need a lot in that show because basically you've got the obvious kind of comedic side, which is the sort of the buddy cops, wisecracking.
Yeah.
And you've got the action, you know, car chases, shootouts, everything you'd expect in a cop show.
Yeah.
And they want all of that, you know, very contemporary sounding and energetic and exciting. And then the same thing with, you know, the sort of procedural stuff. They get to the crime scene and all that. And then you've got a really emotional side to it with particularly one of the characters, the character Riggs, who is the Mel Gibson guy in the movie. You know, he had lost his wife, right? That's the backstory. And, you know, so he's always sort of, he's going through something and he's a bit of a broken character, right? So you have this kind of vulnerable side to him. And we do for that, we do a lot of these, like, I for lack of a better word, I call them guitar collages. You know, where it's like a lot of different textures and stuff that, I mean, it's a guitar, but it doesn't sound like a guitar almost. It's using a lot of effects. At some point, I'll have, like, look in here, I've got 4 different delays and 2 different reverbs and, and a polyoctave generator going, you know, and sometimes they're all on and kind of going. And that's cool because you get an opportunity to create something kind of new.
Yeah.
And very different than what I'm doing on like the 100, for instance. But I think that's what makes the show so successful right now. I think it's that people are really responding to like the emotional side of that character. And, you know, so the show has heart, you know what I mean? And even the partner Murtaugh, Damon Wayans, who's a comedian, you know, by trade, that's his main thing, right? I mean, he delivers a lot of heart in his character. So it's kind of a lovable show and it's a lot of fun. I could see why people are signing on to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen the first 2 episodes of it. I really enjoyed it. I think it got the spirit of the movie to it, but it's a nice update and it works really well. And it worked good as a weekly TV show, I think. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. And it's episode 8 you jump onto to that, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. And 8, and we've got, I can't remember, we're doing 18 of them.
You're doing 18? Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So how many shows do you tend to be running at the same time?
Well, you know, 2 is like pretty manageable. With 2, I'm doing all the writing. I've done as many as 5. That's not great. I mean, I like to do one at a time. At a time best. But 2 I can still manage. I mean, I got 3 guys working for me, you know, helping, you know, with the different aspects of things. One, you know, who's like an engineer who's mixing everything. One who's like doing all this mix prep, bouncing the MIDI, conforming, making stems. And then another one who's like, will help with orchestration, or, you know, I do a thing that I call it box cues, where we'll take, you know, like a cue previously written that works for a scene or a theme or something. We'll throw it in there that session, and then we'll go in and we'll, you know, rearrange, play things on top of it, record new stuff and kind of make it a new thing. Yeah. And so the person fulfilling that role usually is working most closely with me and kind of knows, you know, my writing style and can kind of jump in. You know, if I say, hey, you know what, add some propulsive layers over here, you know, we need to flesh out this little piano thing I wrote as a string thing. Let's make that, you know, and it gets into that. If I go beyond what I have now workload wise, I usually need to do get a little bit of help on the ghostwriting front.
Yeah.
And with that, then I like to be as upfront with the client as I can and be like, look, you know, I'm going to share this gig with somebody here.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a particular instrument that you enjoy trying to weave into stuff when you're doing it? You know, obviously it needs to be the sort of something appropriate, but is there something that you think, I'd really like to try and get this into something?
You know, I think I used to, and now I think it's been kind of beaten out of me. you know, I'm a guitar player before anything else. I mean, I play, you know, a number of instruments, many of them badly, but you know, the guitar I can play pretty well. And I always used to try and get the guitar in there. And there were certain like textures or pedals or ways that I would do it that I was sort of like, that's my sound. Mm. But then, you know, I got into a couple gigs where like I put in that sound, it was my sound. And they were like, I don't want that sound. And I'm like, okay. So now I'm like, I'm kind of like, you know, the story dictates, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of final questions for you. There are two things that we usually ask people. First one will be, what shows are you watching at the moment?
I just have been watching Frontier, which is a new Netflix series.
Jason Momoa, yeah.
The last episode of it now. I was a big fan of, or still am a big fan of Black Sails.
Yes, yeah.
Which Bear McCreary does the music for that. I really like the music. I kind of like the look of the show, the characters. And this sort of reminded me a little of that, although not on the high seas. So I was like, yeah, I'll scope that one out. And certainly the main title was really similar. I was like, well. Yeah. I've been watching that. And then I guess I'm a huge Vikings fan.
I love that series. Yeah.
That's the one I like. Trevor Morris does the music for that. He's a friend.
Yeah.
I like these adventure-y kind of, it's stuff like that that I get into. I mean, you know, I don't have much time to watch stuff now because I'm, you know, deep in it. But I'll be unemployed next month and then I'll...
Yeah. So if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, so it could be an old show or something that's coming up, what show would it be?
Star Trek. Definitely. That was my jam.
Stuff. Well, Discovery still in production. I don't know
I'm a huge fan of all of the kind of the old sci-fi stuff. And, you know, if you ask me a movie, I might come up with something different.
Yeah.
Movies, you know, there's the sort of noir stuff. I love that film noir.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the new incarnation of it, like I would love to have done Sin City.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites. I'm a huge graphic novel fan and I love I have all the Frank Miller graphic novel series of that. Or maybe Chinatown. If I were to score a movie, it would be Chinatown. That would be the one.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, I agree with you on the graphic novels. If I could pick the computer up, I'd show you the room next door, which basically has a wall from floor to ceiling with the graphic novels.
Yeah, nice. I love it. I love that stuff.
So, yeah,
I've written a graphic novel. I've written several that I've been, you know, trying to get illustrated. And my first one is almost close to being illustrated, at least the first issue of it.
Oh, wow. So
in a couple of months, I bet, or maybe even a month, I'll have it ready. And I wrote a whole album of music to accompany it. Songs and score.
That's very cool.
It's called Dusk Riders. So I'll let you know when that comes out.
Yeah. Send me a message when that comes out.
I will.
So you said you'll be unemployed in a month. Have you got anything lined up or?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm gonna dive back into my little graphic novel thing here.
Okay.
This series, Dusk Riders, I've written 6 issues in the first one, and you know we've just about finished the first one, and I've written all this music for it. So I'm going to just keep that going. And it's basically like it came out of the idea of like the last time I had downtime, I was like, all right, I need to create the thing that I want to write music for. You know what I mean? So I came up with the story. You know, I've always been a writer and I was like, you know what? I could come up with something that I would be kind of my dream scoring gig. Then I'll score it, which is what I did.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's a great idea. So is that going to be available somewhere?
The initial thing I want to do with it is to release it digitally. I've got a couple of, I can't speak about exactly
yeah.
how that's doing it, because I want to maintain ownership of it.
Yeah.
So the initial thing will be to kind of get it out that way and kind of build a little something for it and sort of establish the world. And then we'll see if, you know, if I'm in a position to bring on anything heavier to kind of help
yeah.
lift it up. So we'll see.
Cool. I'll look forward to seeing it. That should be very cool. Well, thanks for spending the time. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll talk again next time.
Great chatting with you.
Awesome. Cheers. Bye. So that was the interview with Trey Adams. Hope you really enjoyed that. Go and look up his band, The Howling Vaults. I'm sure they'll be on Spotify and stuff if you want more of that. Next up, we have some highlights for next week. So, coming up next week on TV, we have, for those who haven't seen The Brilliant Mr. Robot, the second season is coming onto the Universal Channel for those of you that haven't got Amazon Prime, although, as we've said earlier, get Amazon Prime.
It's worth the money.
You can get both seasons.
Not just on the savings that you make on deliveries.
Yeah.
You get the music.
Yeah, because you get a load of music
it's
with
not
it.
Just,
yeah.
It's not just yeah. being able to watch
this
series.
Sounds like a major plug for Amazon Prime. They aren't a sponsor, but yeah.
Other online stores are available.
Yeah, but Amazon's really good. Mr. Robot coming to the Universal Channel for the second season. That's on the 19th of April at 9 p.m. Such a good show.
It's fantastic. It's one of those ones that I wasn't convinced by when I read the review of it, and the you know yeah. what it was. I thought, I can't really be bothered with that, but having watched just a few episodes, I was properly hooked.
Yeah, Rami Malek's just amazing in it. Really good. New Girl season 6, that's coming to E4 on the 20th of April at 9:30. This was a show that I found quite funny and then sort of dropped away from about 4 seasons ago. So it's perfectly watchable. I just, you know, yeah.
Is it worth 6 seasons then?
I'm not sure. It was a bit on the bubble about being renewed this time around. Right. So we'll say Bosch is back for its 3rd season on Amazon Prime. Again, this is one that I haven't got around to watching, but everybody tells me it's really good. Based on the Michael Connelly books about a detective. So it's supposed to be very good though. So
I don't love detective shows generally.
Yeah, well, that's me. I'm not never been massively into them. So, you know, I do watch some of them, but Bill Nye Saves the World is coming for its first season. This is a new show on Netflix on the 21st of April. So this is Bill Nye the Science Guy, who's probably better known in the US than he is over here, although he is now known over here due mainly to Big Bang Theory, yeah. probably more than anything else. But Bill Nye the Science Guy, he's basically a sort of science stroke chat show. Right. So it's him with a bunch of guests, celebrity guests, exploring a range of topics from sciencey stuff through politics and general kind of frivolous sort of how does this work type of thing.
Not the actor, Bill Nye with...
Bill Nye, yes, no. Bill Nye, not Bill Nye. They should get both of them on. That would just confuse everybody.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, because he doesn't do science. And I was like, that's a different guy.
Yeah, Bill Nye as opposed to Bill Nye. Yes. So, yeah, that looks quite good fun. I might go and watch that when it comes up. There's a show called Versailles, which is coming for its second season on BBC Two on the 21st of April at 9:30. The short tagline, which Andrew wrote for it, says the BBC does French period drama, so I can't tell you any more about it than that.
Do you not see the first season? I haven't seen it.
No, I didn't watch it.
It's exactly what you'd expect.
Right, okay.
It's exactly what you would expect. Lots of wigs and bad facial hair. Ooh. And heaving bosoms. It's not bad if that's what you're after.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine. Grantchester season 3, that's coming to ITV on the 23rd of April at 9 p.m. A priest who happens to also be a retired Scots Guard teams up with a policeman in 1950s Cambridgeshire. So again, not really my sort of show, but it's on ITV if you want to go and watch it. Genius, which is a mini-series coming to National Geographic, looked kind of interesting. 23rd of April at 9 p.m. It's the story of how Albert became Einstein. Is how it's been pitched. Stars Jeffrey Rush as Albert Einstein for some of it, but it's going through his life. So yeah. Jeffrey Rush
but
is
likely
playing...
to be playing him as a young person.
Yes, exactly. Jeffrey Rush is playing the older Einstein, whereas the
That's a really good bit of casting,
him.
I think.
Yeah, no, it's a great bit of casting, and it's been trailered quite a lot. It looks really interesting. The Durrells is back for a second season on ITV on the 23rd of April at 8 p.m. That's the 1930s drama starring Keely Hawes about a family that moves from Bournemouth to the Greek island of Corfu. I didn't see the first season of this because it's
not a secret that I love Keely Hawes.
Yeah.
But even that didn't make me watch the first season.
No. I don't know what you mean. A lot of people did watch the first season of it. It was hugely, hugely popular. So, I won't be watching the second season of this either because it's not my sort of thing. But I know that it's a hugely popular show. And then Silicon Valley is back for its fourth season on Sky Atlantic on the 24th of April at 10 past 10. I adore Silicon Valley. It's absolute genius. Just comedy gold pretty much throughout. So, I would urge people to go and watch that.
I haven't seen it.
Haven't you?
No.
The box sets are on Sky Catch Up.
Okay.
So go and watch them. They'll be on Now TV as well. Yeah. So go and watch the box sets of it. It's about a startup in Silicon Valley. And it's just the sort of comedy of the dealing with the various people in Silicon Valley and them getting kind of bought out by other people and then people sort of layering stuff upon stuff out of it. It's just really, really well written.
Okay.
Sort of half hour comedy.
I'll give it a try. The thing is, I guess it's kind of Amazon Prime and Netflix. And a lot of the stuff that's on Sky now, I don't tend to, unless it's on when I'm watching it.
Yeah.
I tend to miss out on it. So I don't really go through the sort of Sky Watch Again stuff as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Maybe I should get back to it.
Yeah, there are. I mean, certainly Sky Atlantic is worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah.
Because there's some great stuff on Sky Atlantic. Really, really interesting things.
So you're going to wrestle the controller from the kids.
Well, I mean, if you've
just
got...
Just get a television in the bedroom and just watch that. We don't have a television in the bedroom, so it's like...
Yeah. You get a Now TV account, Sky Go, something like that. You might have a Sky Go subscription attached to your expensive Sky subscription, possibly.
I think I cancelled it.
Oh, well.
Maybe I'll get it again.
Yeah, maybe. But no... Silicon Valley coming on 24th of April on 10 past 10 on Sky Atlantic. Well worth watching. So I think that's everything for this week. It's probably going to be quite a long one. So unless you've got anything else you want to add in?
No. Just everybody keep away from me with the Expanse spoilers.
Yes.
That's just, so if you meet me, don't mention Expanse if you've been watching the second season.
And Netflix, hurry up with Expanse season 2.
Trying to avoid it on YouTube is really difficult.
Yeah, I've been trying to avoid that as well. I managed to keep away from most of it. But Netflix, if you're listening, hurry up with the next season, please. So if you want to find more information about air dates and the latest news, you can come to the website at geektown.co.uk. If you want to get in touch, you can send questions and comments to podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.